Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of our newspaper broadcast, Monday, April 27th. In this second hour, we're going to be bringing you the audio from Governor Greg Abbott's press conference he gave at 2:30 this afternoon from Austin regarding the reopening of Texas. That audio is about 42 minutes long, so we will be bringing you the governor's remarks in about 17 or 18 minutes in their entirety. Until then, here are more local articles from today's Midland and Odessa newspapers.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, April 27th, 2020. This is Section A. The headline reads, Midland Medical Lodge Previously Cited, by Caitlin Randall. Midland Medical Lodge, the nursing home where 22 residents and 8 employees have tested positive for the novel coronavirus, previously was cited for failing to maintain an infection control program. The facility received the citation in October 2019, according to an inspection report on the Department of Health and Human Services website. Based on observation, interview, and record review, the facility failed to maintain an infection control program designed to help prevent the development and transmission of infections, the report states. The citation stems from an incident on October 24, 2019, in which a nursing aide, while changing a resident's disposable brief, placed the used brief and wipes soiled with feces on the floor of the resident's room, according to the report. When the nursing aide was later interviewed by a DHHS inspector, he said he placed the soiled items on the floor because he was not prepared to perform incontinent care, the report states. This failure could affect residents by placing them at an increased and unnecessary risk of exposure to communicable diseases and infections, the inspector states in the report. Records show Midland Medical Lodge received a federal fine of $7,222 on the date of the inspection. It is unclear which citation the fine pertains to because the facility received 4 citations on that day. The deficiency noted for failing to provide and implement an infection prevention and control program was corrected by the facility a month later, according to state records. Midland Medicare gave Midland Medical Lodge 1 star out of a possible 5 stars for health inspections, according to the agency's website. The agency notes that this rating is much below average. The rating is based on the number of citations a nursing home has received over the last 3 years. Midland Medical Lodge has received 13 health citations in this time period, while the average for nursing homes in Texas is 6.9 health citations, according to Medicare's website. State records show the facility's most recent inspection was in January of 2019. 6 citations were given at that time. 4 were violations of the state's health code, and 2 were violations of the state's life safety code. 2 of the January violations stem from an incident involving a nursing aide removing a resident's oxygen tube and forgetting to put it back, according to the inspection report. It states the resident's oxygen levels fell to 84% before a family member recognized the tube was not in the resident's nose. In an interview with the inspector, the nursing aide is stated to have said, "I forgot to put the oxygen back on." Administrators with Midland Medical Lodge did not return requests for comment on the citation regarding an infection control program. This article is entitled, First Midland Medical Lodge Coronavirus Case Confirmed April 3rd, by Caitlin Randall. An outbreak at Midland Medical Lodge that led to 22 residents and 8 employees testing positive for the novel coronavirus appears to have begun around April 3rd, after a 30-something administrative employee contracted the virus after traveling domestically. That employee, a woman in her 30s, was confirmed positive on April 3rd and was treated for COVID-19 as an inpatient at Midland Memorial Hospital, according to a city spokesperson. She was the first person at the facility to test positive for the virus. Three other administrative employees contracted the virus shortly after. A woman who is also in her 30s tested positive on April 4th, and a woman in her 40s and a woman in her 20s tested positive on April 7th. According to the city spokesperson, these employees did not receive treatment in the hospital. They self-isolated at home. The City of Midland Health Department did not alert residents, family members, or members of the news media of the outbreak until April 14th, 11 days after the first employee tested positive for the virus. They confirmed on April 14th that two residents and a part-time nurse, as well as the four administrative employees, had tested positive. They did not say at the time when administrative employees were known to have contracted the coronavirus. Health department officials said they did not tell the public about the outbreak until a resident had tested positive because there was low concern for the situation until then, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. In the week after the public was made aware of the outbreak, 20 more residents and 3 more employees tested positive for the virus. 3 residents have since died from complications related to COVID-19. A woman in her 90s who died on April 17th, a woman in her 80s who died on April 21st, and a woman in her 70s who died on April 23rd. It was announced on April 15th that Midland Medical Lodge had created an isolation wing for symptomatic residents. Midland Memorial Hospital CEO Russell Myers said the wing was similar to the COVID-19 unit in the hospital, and hospital officials had assisted the nursing home in setting up the ward. Myers said hospital staff tested all residents at the nursing home on April 17th. On April 22nd, he said all residents were quarantining in their rooms and public spaces at the facility had been closed. The last individual connected to the facility who has been confirmed positive, a woman in her 70s who is a resident, was reported on April 22nd.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American for Monday, April 27th. Front page. ORMC now offering 24/7 OBGYN coverage by Ruth Campbell. 7 obstetrician gynecologists have joined forces to provide 24-hour coverage for patients at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Dr. James Van Riper said the service started April 1st, and he calls them laborists. Others might call them hospitalists. The program ensures every pregnant patient presenting to labor and delivery is seen by an obstetrician. Currently, Van Riper said, they are seeing patients that are 20 weeks along all the way past the patient's due date. Patients before 20 weeks are seen in the regular emergency room, and we are available for consults. He noted the laborist doesn't replace the patient's own physician. The laborist is there to help the patient and the doctor. We can assist doctors during difficult deliveries or cesarean deliveries, Van Riper said. With the advent of the coronavirus, he said the hospital thought about putting off the program. We really thought about delaying it until this blew over, but the main concern was just some of the local OBGYNs got sick or something with the coronavirus. It's kind of like a backup. Someone's always there for the patients, but we thought it would be a good thing to start, so if some of us did need to be quarantined or something, someone's always going to be there for our patients. Even patients who don't have a physician, someone's there 24 hours a day in labor and delivery to take care of them, so it really helps us out a lot better in private practice, Van Riper said. All the OBGYNs are board certified. They are available for pregnant women, but also any type of gynecological emergency where someone has to be hospitalized, he said. C-sections and inductions are still performed. At the time of this interview, ORMC had stopped elective surgeries, but Van Riper said it's business as usual for labor and delivery. People have to deliver. There are still C-sections that occur if needed. And so labor and delivery really hasn't changed, he said. Some of the physicians work 7, 24-hour shifts, and others work a bit less. Right now there are 7 of us. Some of us are in private practice and do this, like myself, and then some are doing this full time. The company also has what they like to call travelers. So if some of us were on vacation or got sick or something, there's a backup, kind of like a traveler that can come in and do a few shifts that's maybe not from the area, Van Riper said. The company OBHG, or the Obstetric Hospital Group, said they started back in 2006, and they're the largest company that's dedicated just to OBGYN providers, just for hospitals. Other companies might do emergency room or anesthesia services or other things. This company is dedicated just to OBGYN providers, Van Riper said. A patient's regular doctor will still perform the delivery, but for emergencies, one of the OHG could care for them and their doctor would be notified about what's going on. Van Riper said the OB emergency department has been in the works for a year to a year and a half. I personally had a friend in Lubbock, and they were one doctor short, and so I signed up to come up there as a kind of a backup. I really enjoyed doing that. I did it a few times a month, and so when we were talking about this here, there were some choices of who to use and do we do this or not, Van Riper said. He thought about the benefit of the patient experience in Lubbock, where complications could be reduced because the regular OBGYNs could be at home when someone's in labor. They're not up there 24 hours. If there was an emergency, there's someone readily available to help with that. It also helps the private practicing physician because we can tell them and easily relay information to them about what's going on with their patient, if needed, Van Riper said. And plus, sometimes when we're in private practice, we have patients in the office. We have patients in labor and delivery, and we kind of get pulled every which way. We have a family at home, and so forth, and it's just so nice to have someone that can help out. He added that he feels it makes for a better patient experience and safety. We stay up there in the hospital. We have a call room near labor and delivery on the same floor, and then we also have part of where labor and delivery's at. We have a dedicated area for that see the patients arriving for their initial evaluation. Like, did their water break, or maybe they had bleeding, or have some other concern. Then they're all seen by the laborist, or their private doctor can immediately come in and see them. And then we determine, are they in labor or not? If they're in labor, they're admitted to their regular doctor in labor and delivery. So we're just kind of there 24 hours a day in labor and delivery, Van Riper said. Currently at ORMC, Van Riper said one support person can come in for the delivery and the postpartum. He added that there are a lot of factors that go into that, such as how many masks and gowns will be available. That person will be screened, as every person is that enters the hospital currently, for symptoms. One person is allowed in there. I know some of the hospitals, maybe in like New York City, have changed that, and that's a big concern. But currently, no one wants that to happen here. It's so important to have at least one support person with you, he said. There are no extra precautions after the baby is born if the patient doesn't have any signs or symptoms of COVID-19. The recommendation is for a new mother to limit contact at home and limiting contact with visitors. We should all practice social distancing, especially with the newborn baby, Van Riper said. He said they have not gotten much feedback on the OBGYN service so far, but in places like Lubbock, patients have said it's a better experience for them. If a patient has a concern and it's 2 a.m., they can see an OBGYN and get some reassurance that everything's okay. Or if there's a real emergency, we can handle that emergency until their physician gets there, and everyone I've come across in this so far is very thankful and appreciative of the service, Van Riper said. Van Riper has been in practice since 2001 and in Odessa since 2007. He said he has been a laborist at Covenant Children's Hospital in Lubbock for about 2 years. He's been pulling fewer shifts because of the service starting at ORMC. We can still pick how many shifts we want to do as long as the schedule is covered. I've covered enough so I can still have my practice, but still do this too, Van Riper said. It's been a real joy to me to do this because you can kind of see that immediate benefit, like I really accomplished something better for them and good for the patient. So it gives us, as a physician, that satisfaction of doing something good for the patient. It kind of rewards us in a way, he added. Dr. Mary Grace Bridges, who has been in practice for a little more than 3 years, joined the group in March. The benefit of having laborists is patients can be evaluated by an obstetrician whenever they come in, and they can provide extra help to the private OBs in the area. I think it's a great resource, not only for the hospital, but for the community, Bridges said. My training is very unique to where I am an OBGYN, but I also did a fellowship in breast surgery, so I know that with the OBED, that doesn't really play a role in that, but I actually specialize in breast surgery as well, Bridges said. She said the group of OBGYNs has worked well together. She was with Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in Amarillo before arriving in Odessa. I think they're all outstanding physicians, and I'm really excited and looking forward to having that group collaborative, Bridges said. She noted that this is an interesting, scary, and challenging time for physicians and healthcare providers. Bridges said they take extra precautions now with the ongoing research about labor and pregnancy and coronavirus. Providers spend more time with the patient who is giving birth, so there is an increased risk of exposure. So personal protective equipment has been increased. ORMC President Stacy Brown said the hospital is excited to offer the obstetrical emergency department in the Permian Basin. This is a significant investment that will result in better access and higher quality of care for our community. This gives our obstetric patients the ability to see an OBGYN doctor around the clock in an ER setting. It not only benefits our patients, but also provides a respite to our private OBGYN physicians who work so diligently to provide around-the-clock quality care for their patients, Brown said in a statement. That's all the time we have for the local stories from the Midland and Odessa newspapers this Monday, April 27th. For the remainder of our hour, we're going to bring you 42 minutes of Governor Greg Abbott's press conference he gave at 2:30 this afternoon regarding reopening Texas.
All right. Listen, for the past 2 months, Texans have forged a bond of unity and trust. We've worked together for a cause far greater than ourselves. Millions of Texans have sacrificed their livelihoods, as well as so many of their cherished moments, in an unprecedented effort to prioritize the health and safety of our fellow Texans. It's been a collective effort to slow the spread of COVID-19. Well, because of your efforts, the COVID-19 infection rate has been on the decline over the past 17 days. Because of your efforts, and especially the work of our doctors and nurses and all healthcare providers, our hospitalization rate has held steady, and our hospital capacity has remained abundant. At the same time, we must not forget those who have lost their lives because of COVID-19. Our hearts will remain with their families and their loved ones. Every life lost is a tragedy. But the fact is, the tragedies in Texas have been far fewer than in most states in the United States. And I'm proud to say that Texas has the third most recoveries from COVID-19 in America. In fact, the number of people who have recovered from COVID-19 will soon exceed the number of active cases. The lives saved are priceless, but the price has been steep. Many have lost jobs. Others have lost businesses. Many are struggling to pay their bills. I want those Texans to know they are not alone in this fight. Just as we united as one state to slow COVID-19, we must also come together to begin rebuilding the lives and the livelihoods of our fellow Texans. Well, since March, we've been laying the groundwork to reopen Texas. We ensured additional hospital facilities were available to meet the needs of COVID-19 patients. We stocked up on PPE supplies like masks. We closed schools to slow the coronavirus spread. We even required travelers from other states to self-quarantine to reduce importing COVID-19 into Texas. And we also reduced large gatherings of people to better slow the spread of the coronavirus. Also, I deployed more than 3,000 Texas National Guard. They will be operating 25 mobile COVID testing sites across Texas, as well as 3 fixed testing sites in Houston, Huntsville, and Kingsville. They are operating 9 PPE distribution sites, and they deployed a team that manufactures more than 500,000 N95 masks each day. They've already made more than 6 million of those masks. And they're also helping Texas families. They've deployed almost 1,000 National Guard to prepare and serve meals at food banks across our state. Now, we also are working for those who are filing unemployment claims. We have provided the Texas Workforce Commission with desperately needed help. Help to respond to the record-breaking unemployment claims that have been filed. With new hires, as well as volunteers that have been offered up by both the Texas House and the Texas Senate, as well as from state agencies, we have more than tripled the Texas Workforce Commission staff to more than 2,000. More than 1.9 million claims have been filed. But now, more than 1.6 million have been processed, and over $2 billion has been paid out in unemployment benefits. Now, our goal, of course, is to get those Texans back to work, and that is what today is all about. My executive order to stay at home that was issued last month is set to expire on April the 30th. That executive order has done its job to slow the growth of COVID-19, and I will let it expire as scheduled. Now, it's time to set a new course, a course that responsibly opens up business in Texas. We will open in a way that uses safe standards for businesses, for their employees, as well as for their customers. Standards based upon data and on doctors. I want to thank the Strike Force team led by James Huffines, working with a board of advisors and consulting with doctors to hone best practices that allow as many businesses as possible to open in ways that contain the spread of COVID-19. I also want to thank the Lieutenant Governor and the Speaker, as well as all of our legislators. And I especially want to thank our team of medical professionals who have spent countless hours providing input about the safest ways that businesses can operate. The team includes Dr. Helderstedt, the Commissioner of the Department of State Health Services. It includes Dr. McClellan, a former head of the FDA and the former head of Medicaid and Medicare for the United States. It includes Dr. Hudson, an infectious disease specialist who's also the director of testing and tracing COVID-19 at the University of Texas Dell Medical School. And it includes Dr. Zerwas, the executive vice chancellor for health affairs at the University of Texas System. Additionally, I remain in regular contact with Dr. Birx as well as with the CDC. And we will continue to depend upon these experts as we move forward to safely open Texas for business. There's a reason that all businesses in Texas cannot open all at once. We've already seen precautionary tales of what can happen when things reopen. There have been reports that China is now having new outbreaks. Singapore is having a second wave that's bigger than its first wave. There's coronavirus expansion in places like Hong Kong and Japan. The deal is, it's a fact. It's hard to get rid of this virus because it is so contagious. So we're not just going to open up and hope for the best. Instead, we will put measures in place that will help businesses open while also containing the virus and keeping Texans safe. Now, I said 10 days ago, opening Texas must occur in phases. Obviously, not all businesses can open all at once. A more strategic approach is required to ensure that we don't reopen only to have to close down again. So, consistent with CDC guidelines and based on advice from infectious disease specialists, we will open Texas businesses in phases. Phase one begins this Friday, May 1st. If we can contain the spread of COVID-19 during that time period, we can move to phase two as early as May the 18th. Phase two will open more businesses and allow the businesses open in phase one to expand their operations. We need to see 2 weeks of data to confirm no flare-up of COVID-19. That is exactly why. Now, more than ever, Texans must continue safe distancing practices. If we do that, we will be able to expand into phase two, opening up our economy even more. Well, as we go into phase one, the most important element of phase one is protecting our most vulnerable Texans. People age 65 and over represent just over 20% of the Texans who test positive for COVID-19. But more than 75% of deaths were people 65 and older. Here's the point. If we redouble our efforts to protect our most vulnerable senior citizens, we can reduce COVID-19 deaths while also expanding business operations and increasing the number of Texans reentering the workforce. To achieve these goals, phase one does several things. It emphasizes the importance of vulnerable populations remaining at home if at all possible. If they need to get out, businesses should make special accommodations to limit the exposure that our vulnerable population has to people who may have COVID-19. We will also redouble our efforts to protect seniors in nursing homes and other senior living facilities. That includes things like better infectious disease protocols at senior living centers. The bottom line is this. The more we do to protect our vulnerable senior population, the faster we can safely open business in Texas. Next is a list of the businesses that can open safely on May the 1st. Now, once again, the ultimate decision about the types of businesses and the extent to which they can open was driven by the doctors advising us about safe medical practices. Those doctors also prescribed health guidelines for businesses, for employees, and for customers. Those protocols focus on minimizing the spread of COVID-19. They are contained in this book that can also be found at gov.texas.gov/OpenTexas. So with my new executive order, all retail stores, restaurants, movie theaters, and malls can reopen May the 1st. Now, to minimize the spread of COVID-19 during phase one, on the advice of doctors, I am limiting occupancy to no more than 25%. This is a proven business strategy. It's exactly the type of practice successfully used by HEB and Home Depot. The extent to which this order opens up businesses in Texas supersedes all local orders. If phase one works while containing COVID-19, phase two will expand that occupancy to 50%. Further increases will be allowed in the future so long as COVID-19 remains contained. Something important to remember, this order allows these businesses to reopen. It does not require them to do so. If a business owner feels unsafe opening at this time, or for other reasons doesn't want to reopen, there's no requirement to do so. Additionally, all museums and libraries can open under the same 25% capacity. However, interactive areas of museums with hands-on exhibits must remain closed at this time. And again, this is permission to open, not a requirement. Some libraries and museums are operated privately or by local governments or universities. It's up to them to decide if they are able to open. The state will work to open its libraries and museums by May 1 or soon thereafter. Now, a lot of business in Texas is done by sole proprietors. They can safely return to work now. The guidance in this book and online provides safe standards for sole practitioners. Also, churches and places of worship, they were kept open under the existing executive order. But effective May the 1st, they will be able to expand their capacity even more. We do, however, emphasize the importance of safe distancing practices to ensure that church members remain protected from COVID-19. Outdoor sports are also allowed at this time, so long, however, as it involves no more than four participants playing together at any one particular time, and so long as certain distancing practices are followed. Examples of this would be things like golf and tennis. If COVID-19 can be contained in phase one, the goal would be to expand the number of participants in phase two to allow even more sporting activities to be engaged in. Doctors, nurses, and dentists, they need to get back to work. But even more importantly, patients need to get in to see those doctors, nurses, and dentists. So, all licensed healthcare professionals are allowed to return to work with few restrictions. However, all licensed hospitals still must reserve 15% of capacity for COVID-19 patients. All of these things I've outlined are in addition to the many parts of our economy that never shut down. Our farmers and ranchers, grocery stores and drug stores and hardware stores, our home builders and realtors, manufacturers, construction workers, car dealers, banks and gas stations all have continued to operate. Those and other essential services will be allowed to continue to operate as they have. Now, one thing we all know, Texas is a big state with a very diverse geography. The fact is, not all counties are alike, and not all counties are affected the same by COVID-19. As our medical team explained, even in low population counties, COVID-19 can still spread very rapidly. Moore County and Donley County are just two examples of that. So, to protect rural counties from the spread of COVID-19 and to prevent counties with little or no COVID-19 from being punished. A different standard can apply to counties with five or fewer cases of COVID-19. This would include almost half of the counties in the state of Texas. For those counties, they must comply with all of the safety standards outlined by the doctors. But for all business activities that have been limited to a 25% capacity, in the counties with five or fewer COVID-19 cases, they can increase their capacity to 50%. That said, as explained in this manual, there are still some conditions that must be met for the county to qualify. And note also, as explained in the manual, if there is an outbreak of COVID-19, it could cause a county to revert back to a more limited capacity. Now, there are some businesses that I want to open, that Texans want open, that the doctors advised were simply not safe enough to open at this particular time. They include barbershops and hair salons, bars and gyms. We are working with our medical team as well as working with members of the industry sectors to open these businesses as soon as possible. My hope is that they will open on or no later than mid-May. Now listen, we realize that an important part of reopening is access to child care. We have already established a robust child care program for essential workers. The Child Care Task Force is led by Elaine Mendoza. They developed an online site that connects workers with local child care. The site lists over 6,000 providers in over 1,000 zip codes in almost 200 counties across the state. Currently, there are more than 120,000 child care spots that are available for essential workers. Our goal is to find ways to expand those resources and make them available in a safe way to more workers across the entire state. We know how important this issue is to working families, and we're giving it the speedy attention that it deserves. The same applies to summer camps. We know how important they are for our kids and how important they are for parents. Our medical team is still working on safe ways that kids will be able to attend summer camps. We know that camps are trying to get ready to make announcements for plans sometime soon. So we will continue working as swiftly as possible on ways to open summer camps, knowing that safety of all kids at camps is the most important consideration. Now, a core part of opening up safely is having an effective testing and tracing process, a process that can quickly identify any flare-ups in COVID-19. We have already developed a robust testing and tracing program to help identify others who may have been infected. Phase one of our tracing program is already completed. It mobilized a team of more than 1,100 state and local contact tracers. It created a contact tracing IT application. It set up a COVID-19 contact tracing call center. Phase two of that program begins today. During the next 2 weeks, they will add another 1,000 tracers. They will deploy the contact tracing application statewide and deploy statewide the COVID-19 contact tracing call center. Phase three of the program will use the month of May to build a team of 4,000 contact tracers. Here's what the team does. They test for those who may be affected. They then help isolate those who test positive. Then they try to locate everyone who's been in contact with the infected person. And then they work with them to self-isolate for 14 days. What that process does is it will box in the expansion of COVID-19. This process will be bolstered by an increase in testing. When you aggregate all of the tests run by the state and local governments with the rapidly increasing number of tests run by the private sector, we should easily exceed our goal of 25,000 tests per day. Well, I had the opportunity to talk to Dr. Burks about this plan, and I sent her a copy of it. And she said the Texas plan was great. I want to join governors from across the country, from both parties, in thanking President Trump for all they have done to help our state. They truly have been available to us on a 24/7 basis. Now, safely opening Texas for business requires four things. One, a commitment to continue safe distancing practices that reduce the spread of COVID-19. Two, reliance on doctors and data to provide the safest strategies. Three, a focus on protecting the most vulnerable from exposure to COVID-19. And four, a reminder that it is entrepreneurs who drive the Texas economy. They need to be unleashed to restore livelihoods while all of us remain focused on protecting the lives of our fellow Texans. We are Texans. We got this. Next, I turn to James Evans.
Thank you, Governor. Well, over the past few months, our state has faced unprecedented challenges. But with your leadership, combined with the incredible resilience of Texans across this state, we have made tremendous progress in our fight against COVID-19. We know that we need to get the Texas economy back on track. We also know this can only be done if we contain the spread of COVID and keep Texans safe. And Governor, by your actions today, it is a major positive step forward to accomplishing this mission. And I'd also like to thank our doctors and our medical experts, Dr. Hellenstad, Dr. McClellan, Dr. Zerwas, and Dr. Hudson. They have worked very hard, as the governor said. And I would like to thank all members of our strike force team who have spent many hours giving us input. I can unequivocally say that they have worked night and day to provide the information and the medical expertise that the governor needs to make the decisions to safely open Texas. Their input will continue to be looked at as we go forward on a daily basis. This will be a process, and we look forward to working with them on a regular basis. We have known from the very start that we cannot just flip a switch and fully reopen the Texas economy. That would risk setting our state backward and also putting more lives in jeopardy. Texas cannot take one step forward and then take two steps backward. Instead, the governor's plans have outlined a safe and strategic game plan for all Texans to begin going to work in a safe manner and beginning some of their daily activities. This methodical method will pay dividends in the long term. And it'll also pay dividends for the health and safety of Texans and for the Texas economy. And I want to finally add and echo a point the governor just made. Texas is where it is today because of the overwhelming response of Texans across the state to slow the spread of COVID. So for us to continue moving forward as a state, we all must do our part as Texans. We all have a serious responsibility to protect our individual health and a responsibility to protect the health around us, of those around us. So it is, if we take this responsibility seriously and fulfill our commitment, I'm confident if we follow the governor's measurements he laid out today, we will get through these challenging times by working together. Thank you.
Thank you, James. No one knows how hard you've been working the past couple of weeks, but I do.
Thank you.
And I appreciate all you're doing for Texas.
Thank you.
Next, Dr. Hellerstedt.
Thank you, Governor. This is really a day for us to be very proud of the success that we've had so far in Texas in containing the COVID-19. The things that we were most worried about in terms of overwhelming our healthcare capacity have not happened, and we've been in a very steady phase for a prolonged period of time right now. And so it is time to start to reopen Texas. I really want to reemphasize what the governor has said, and that is we need to take this seriously, as we have all along. I think that's one of the most encouraging things about Texas. We've taken this very seriously. We've been willing to sacrifice. Now we're going to be in a different phase. We're going to be asked to do some different things that allow us to become physically closer, but still remain out of range of COVID-19. And the things that we've outlined will do that. And I'm confident that the people of Texas understand that and will have the discipline and the goodwill in order to follow these recommendations. And when we do so, I think we'll find that we have reopened Texas very safely and will not have excessive rates of resurgence of COVID-19 in Texas.
Thank you. Next, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick.
Thank you, Governor. This has been an incredible team effort, and the most important members of the team are you, because you have followed the guidelines through the various executive orders and the recommendations. We are in this position, quite frankly, better than any other state in the country, and I really believe any other place in the world. And so now it is incumbent upon you, as has been said, to continue to social distance, wear a mask, that's our suggestion, we're not mandating it, wear a mask, very important. And it's important to our businesses as they open up for them to have customers. And to our businesses that today, or starting on May 1, are going to be able to open up. Finally, I know you've been waiting to do that. Customers are going to come to businesses that they see are safe for them. So this will be a team effort between the customer and between the business. Support your local business as a business. Make it safe for your customers. Because the faster we can get to the next step, the more employees you can hire, the more customers will be there, the more business will be created, and the closer we get to something that will remind us of the Texas we were before all of this happened. So thank you, and God bless you. And again, the most important part of this team moving forward is you, the people of Texas. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Speaker Dennis Bonnet.
Thank you, Governor Abbott. Today is a big day for Texas because we get to take that step. And in taking that step, Lieutenant Governor and Governor have laid out a great strategy, great plan. That step continues to have us be compassionate, considerate of each other. That continues to be patient with each other as businesses open and we enter those businesses. With limited capacities, we're going to have to show patience for those business owners. We're going to have to show patience for those that are trying to get into those businesses with us. We are not there, but we are on the way to getting there. We must continue our social distancing. We must continue our consideration of others. And we must remember that we may not find ourselves as vulnerable as others, but we have compassion for the most vulnerable of our society. And in Texas, the most vulnerable are dying at a higher rate than the rest of us. And that's what we must remember as we reopen Texas, is that our goal is to support our seniors and keep them healthy and keep them alive. And the reality of it is, this is a great roadmap that we've taken from the White House and Governor Abbott and the Strike Force have put into place for Texas. And if we follow this roadmap, Texas will be back to being Texas. God bless you.
Thank you, Speaker. And now, Chief Nimkit.
Thank you, Governor. As we reopen Texas, our focus will be on three things. One is to continue to support testing and the expansion of those testing locations through our personal protective equipment supplies and refilling the supply chain, supporting our local elected officials out there on the front line with the first responders and healthcare workers, and, Governor, continuing to look out on the horizon for other threats that face our state and our normal scope of business. So we remain intact as we reopen. Our emergency management teams are ready to go.
Thank you, Chief. We'll take a few questions.
Governor, Chris Gutierrez here with KPRC-TV out of Houston. You know as well as I do, it doesn't matter what numbers you show, what data you show, there will always be people on the other side who feel this is too early. What would you like to say to them?
We wanted to make sure that we were able to open up as quickly as possible, but as safely as possible. And these are decisions that are the result of tremendous input by the best possible medical team. And we would not be making a decision to open up Texas without that medical advice. We believe that these are the safe strategies, candidly proven strategies. Here's an easy example. We want to open up stores to 25% capacity. That's the way that stores like HEB and other hardware stores have been operating under for the past month, while we have been able to reduce the spread of the coronavirus. I believe we can re-engage our economy while still containing the coronavirus using these proven strategies.
Governor, you said that we need 2 weeks of data to confirm no flare-ups of COVID-19. Can you elaborate? I mean, specifically, are there thresholds that will that will make you reconsider the timeline or putting the restrictions back in place?
So, phase one opens up on May the 1st. We want to usher in phase two as quickly as possible, most likely around the May 18th timetable, if there is no flare-up of COVID-19. And let me explain what that means. We will be tracking data. Because there will be an increase in the amount of testing, it's only logical to see there be an increase in the number of people who test positive. So just because there may be an increase in the number of people who test positive, that alone is not a decisive criteria. The things that we look at that are more important is, what does our hospitalization rate look like? Is it remaining flat like it has been, or is the hospitalization rate rising? What about deaths? We've seen a slow decrease on average in the number of deaths for the past few weeks. Does that trend continue or does it spike up? Are there certain hot spots in certain areas, like what I pointed out in certain regions, for example, of the panhandle that need to be contained? So there's no one single factor we look at. We look at all of the data and consider what the data means, and then we consult with our medical team about what that data means, and through that we make a decision about whether or not we are able to go into phase two.
Governor, one of the four key components or key factors that you mentioned was entrepreneurs drive the Texas economy. And there are some people who invest their money in things like barbershops, nail salons, gyms, and bars that are not allowed to open yet. I think they would argue that there are ways that they could potentially social distance people who come into those businesses as well. What would you like to tell them when they can't open their doors but other businesses can?
We want hair salons, barbershops to open up ASAP. Most people wanted them open weeks ago. And candidly, I think their customers may want them open even more than the business owners want them open. So here's a factor that was looked at that we just need to work our way through. And that is, we do have strategies to avoid having customers come in and aggregate together. The strategy would be to have one customer in per salon worker. But the fact of the matter is, they remain very physically close to each other. I realize they will be wearing masks, but the goal is just to find safe ways in which people can work in close contact with customers while preventing the spread of COVID-19. We think we have some potential solutions. Let us continue to work on it, but we want continued input and best practices and strategies from all of those salons.
But can you understand their frustration?
Absolutely.
Especially when you go into a grocery store and you're in the produce aisle and you're just feet away from someone else who's not wearing a mask?
No doubt it's frustrating, which is exactly why today's announcement is not an end of the work. We go to work this afternoon on working on solutions for more businesses to open, like hair salons.
Governor, going forward, will anything more be done to increase monitoring of African-American communities, which have been disproportionately hit hardest by this?
We are evaluating that, and we are looking forward to working with legislators on trying to formulate strategies that will help us be able to track and monitor and respond to that more effectively.
I couldn't help but notice the Lieutenant Governor mentioned that he suggested people wear masks, not mandate, but suggested it. Today in Harris County, as you know, the largest county in our state, third largest county in the country, the county judge mandated that people in Harris County start wearing masks. This happens on the day that you announce big plans to reopen parts of our economy. Some people will hear this and say there's a disconnect, and to that you'd say what, Governor?
Well, first, as we lay out in this booklet, page after page after page, we strongly recommend that everyone wear a mask. However, it's not a mandate, and we make clear that no jurisdiction can impose any type of penalty or fine for it to be encouraged. But by my executive order, it supersedes local orders with regard to any type of fine or penalty for anyone not wearing a mask.
Governor, you said that we should easily exceed our goal of 25,000 tests per day. Precisely when will that happen? And is that a minimum requirement? Does this plan only work if Texas is testing 25,000 people a day?
I'm going to answer this in part, but ask Dr. Hellerstedt to answer in part also. I will in part tell you what he's told me, and that is, for one, getting up to 25,000 tests is something that should occur early on in the May timetable that we're looking at as we work our way through phase one. The additional tests will be coming in part from the massive increase in the amount of tests being provided by the private sector. Right before coming out here for this, I was on a telephone conference call with the president as well as with Dr. Birx, and they were explaining the increased capacity coming from the private sector to provide those tests. 25,000 is a number that has been provided in part by Dr. Hellerstedt as well as the other doctors on our team, and I will let him explain his analysis there.
Thank you, Governor. Yes, we've looked at the testing capacity around the state, both in the public health system and on the private system, and we believe that we will have available to us 26,000 tests per day. The other encouraging thing is that part of that call that the governor was on, the federal government has committed to solving some of the supply chain problems that have been limiting some of our ability to test, and they're specifically talking about the testing collection kits and the viral transport media that goes with it, and in some cases, the personal protective equipment that's required to obtain a good test. So when those scarcities ease, we will naturally be able to ramp up in the amount of testing that we're doing. And again, we believe that we have within our grasp the ability to do 26,000 a day. I'd like to add to that, though, it's not just about the testing. The important thing that the governor talked about today is the fact that we're putting in place and beginning to make more robust every day our contact tracing capability. So in other words, when somebody tests positive, there'll be a system that can be used statewide so that we can reach out to that person who's tested positive, understand where they have been, who they might have exposed, and then in turn, reach out to those same people. And that is a powerful tool in containing any outbreaks of COVID-19. So it's not just the testing, it's also the contact tracing as well. And we're very happy to see that we were able to bring this new system online, the number of new workers that the governor talked about, and again, that information technology, that computerized system, if you will, that will enable us to coordinate and track and work with our local partners, our city and county local health departments, in order to have much more robust contact tracing in the future.
Governor, I have seen at least one poll that shows Texans would like to continue shelter-in-place orders. I'm sure you've seen the poll that I'm referring to. Did that weigh into your decision? And talk to me about that.
The goal was to find strategies that would ensure both the safety of the public as well as control of the spread of the coronavirus and allowing businesses to open up as much as possible. But understand this, I know there are people who are still concerned about this. There's no requirement that those people leave their home. If you want to stay at home, continue to stay at home. If you are involved in a business, there's no requirement that you open that business. You have every right to choose your own pathway in life, and you have ultimate control over your own personal safety, and you should use that control. And so if you feel like you don't want to get out and potentially expose yourself, just continue to stay home.
Governor, what's the enforcement of this going to look like in terms of 25%, 50%? Who's going to do it, and are there any penalties attached?
I missed the last part of the question.
Are there any penalties attached to this? I mean, just mostly, who's going to be doing the enforcing here?
Right. Well, so for all of these executive orders, before now and now, there's several levels of enforcement. For one, there's the enforcement of up to $1,000 fine and 180 days in jail. But the more primary enforcement would be either the local level or the regulatory level. And so for a lot of these businesses, they have an authorization to conduct business in the state of Texas. And if they violate the law, which this is now the law, they're subject to losing their license to have an open business.
Once again, that was Governor Abbott from Austin with his press conference he gave this afternoon regarding the reopening of Texas. And that is your newspaper broadcast for this Monday, April 27th. Don't forget, we'll bring you another coronavirus update at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and we will surely have some articles related to his presentation that he gave today during that hour. We'll also have the Midland and Odessa mayor's remarks that they are anticipated to give on Facebook Live this evening. We will have national and international news and business for you an hour from now on the Wall Street Journal. And, of course, we'll bring you more newspaper coverage from our local papers tomorrow afternoon at 3. Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.